This is Talking Digital.
Greetings. Welcome to the very first official episode of the Talking Digital podcast. We did do an episode 000 a little earlier in the week, but that was more just kind of an introduction to myself and a little bit about what to expect on future podcasts. This is going to be an actual podcast, an actual episode where you'll get an idea of the sort of things I want to talk about on all the shows, and just a little flavor of how I want each show to go. Of course, this is only the first episode, so I still expect it to be a little bit rough, but we'll work on that and try to make it go as smoothly as possible and hope that you enjoy it. The topics I want to talk about in this episode, I want to talk about Twitter spam, especially followers that are nothing but spammers. Also Windows 7 parties, whether or not though that's a good idea and how to make it fun if you do decide to do it. We're also going to talk a little bit about smartphones, especially the Palm Pre and the Android and the iPhone. Also, I want to just kind of mention moderators and forums and talk about getting involved in the exciting or the fun part of the web, which is sometimes getting into forums and posting questions, helping out, but also the other side of forums that can kind of sometimes be frustrating. And last of all, I do just want to mention a couple quick news items, especially the fact that the Picasa 3.5 is out, and I want to mention some of the features in that you want to look for. So let's kick it off. Let's begin talking a little bit about Twitter. I've noticed I've been on Twitter now for several years. And just recently, within the past few months, I've really started to notice that spam is picking up on Twitter. I don't receive a lot of it myself, but I am starting to notice that the stuff I do get is fairly obnoxious. It's fairly annoying to get this stuff in your account. Basically, that comes through as at replies. And these at replies say something like, at Talking Digital, hey, find out how I lost 32 pounds in the past 2 weeks or whatever it might be. Maybe stuff about learn how I'm investing my money, or one that really irritates me are the ones about how to get more Twitter followers. And you get those at replies, and that's one thing, and I can filter those people out. And if you send a direct message to spam at Twitter, it's at spam with the username of the person who's sending you the spam, it does a pretty good job of filtering it out so you don't get that stuff anymore. But that's just one tip. The bigger part, I think, that's kind of annoying is the artificial follower numbers. And I don't worry too much about how many followers I have. I think right now I only have 400 followers. But the difference between the followers I have and the followers that a lot of other people have are that my followers have been fairly well cleaned out. I know there are still some I don't know what you'd call it, clutter or padding, whatever it is. It's just followers who aren't actually following you. They just click and they're hoping to get a residual follower. They're hoping that as soon as they follow you, that you're going to follow them back. Or that occasionally you might see some of the stuff they post, or they can watch your postings and watch for keywords so that they can reply back when you say something like, today we're going to the bank. Don't be surprised if you get an at reply from one of these followers who tells you, learn how to save more money by investing in gold or investing in, real estate or whatever it might be. So those are the followers that irritate me, and it's more that they bother me because they're not really following. They don't really care what you have to say. And to me, if I have followers, I want them to be somewhat interested in the things I'm saying, as well as the people who I follow. I kind of do the same for them. I watch what they say, and if they say something interesting, I reply back to them or I direct message them. I add them as a favorite, whatever. So I once in a while go through my friends or my followers, and I just clean them out. And the ways I tell whether or not they're spammers, and this is the way I judge whether they're spammers. If you have your own criteria, then feel free to post it on Talking Digital on our website, talkingdigital.org, and share some comments about what you think about it. But I kind of classify a spammer as, even if it's a follower and not somebody who's sending me junk, but to me a spammer on Twitter is just a classification of a user who has nothing more to say than the particular product they're pitching. Sometimes they'll try to fake it. They'll say, we're going to see a movie tonight. I'm reading a great book. Oh, I lost 30 pounds. Find out how. And, you know, they post that about every fifth post. They post a link up to whatever product they're trying to pitch, whether it's a multi-level product or whether it's a, you know, like I said, a way of losing weight or saving money or whatever. But if it doesn't matter what it is, if they're posting that link every 3 to 5 posts, I just consider that spam and clutter, and that will get them kicked off my follower list, and I block them. Whether or not that's a polite thing to do doesn't really matter to me. I get tired of having those followers who are there for nothing else other than to be added in my list. And I know that some people, especially in my early days on Twitter when I first started, I would check and see who people's followers were and see if I had any of the same common followers. And you can see that on Twitter, whether you have the same followers as someone else. And a lot of times if you do have the same followers as someone else, in your mind, that kind of builds up that person's reputation. The fact that you follow them and they follow you, and you have mutual followers. So I try to get rid of anybody who might be trying to cross over into those mutual follower lists. So whether or not that's worth doing, I don't know, but I would love it I would love it if Twitter would find a great way to filter out those junk spammers and those junk followers and find out what people's actual numbers are. I have a very strong feeling that most people who have, let's say, over 500 followers, chances are if you've got over 500 followers, you can really divide that number by 3. And whatever that, you know, you probably only have 2/3 of those are actual followers. A lot of them are probably just marketers, just trying to post the same stuff to you, hoping that you see it and playing the game with the followers. So anybody who tries to tell you that you can get 10,000 followers by the end of the day, or anybody who tells you that follower numbers really mean anything on Twitter, unless it's, you know, unless you only have 2 or 3 followers, or unless you have 1 million followers, or, you know, a couple 100,000 followers, it really doesn't mean that much. You look at some of the big guys in podcasting and in media, many of those, you know, the most I can think of are a lot of times are around 60,000. You look at somebody like Ashton Kutcher and you go through his follower list. Again, if he's got 3 million followers, there's not 3 million people using Twitter that are legitimate people. And we all know that. So it's probably more marketers, people with multiple accounts, things like that. The next thing I want to talk about is the ridiculous Windows 7 party idea. And I say it's ridiculous, and at the same time, I'm throwing one. And how does that work? Well, I'm in Grand Junction, Colorado, and we're throwing a Windows 7 party. If you get a chance, and I'll put it in the show notes for this podcast, if you head over to talkingdigital.org and look at the notes for this podcast, I'm going to post links to Microsoft's suggestions for how to hold your own Windows 7 launch house party. And if you haven't seen the videos yet, they're ridiculous. The other thing that you'll find in there, if you go to houseparty.com and another link that I'll put in the show notes, there's a place where you can print out the party favors. They're not sending out, you know, posters and things like that. They want you to download your own and put them there. There's little videos to watch on how to throw your party. But, you know, that's one thing, showing people how to demonstrate the product and, you know, hoping that people sell the product, that the customers actually do some marketing and some selling of the product. That's one thing. But these videos and the approach that they're taking is borderline campy. It's not borderline. It is campy. It's campy and it's cheesy. And the sad part is it doesn't look like it was intentionally done that way. It comes off as Microsoft being clueless. And if you watch these videos, take a look for yourself, see what you think. So I would just think, if you are going to throw a Windows 7 party, the way I'm going to go about it is I'm going to attempt to make it as cheesy as the videos. I hope to have, you know, a goofy event that people can kind of enjoy. I will, of course, be doing Windows 7 party tricks, showing people how to do the cut and paste and digital photography and, you know, little tips and tricks along the way. I don't mind showing people how it works, because a lot of the people who I work with and who Rick Castellini at HelpMeRick.com, we're both in Grand Junction, Colorado, working on this project together. And we each have a lot of customers and a lot of associates and a lot of people who we've worked with here in town that really want to know about Windows 7. And so this is actually, I think, a legitimate event and something that we look forward to doing. However, the approach that they take with Windows 7 is it's silly. I hope it works well for them, and I hope that that Windows 7 does turn out to be a good product. It certainly has to be better than Vista, and by all accounts, so far, that's what it seems to be. But this party idea is kind of goofy. I'm not sure whether it's as goofy as the Jerry Seinfeld videos or commercials with Bill Gates. But Microsoft has had a tough time trying to figure out a marketing strategy for their products lately. Moving on. Let's talk a little bit about smartphones. A few things in the smartphone field. There's a whole bunch of new Android phones that are getting announced. Most surprisingly are a couple phones from Motorola that have slide-out keyboards. One of them is a larger phone like the iPhone. And then there's another one that seems smaller. It's like the Sidekick, and it appears to be marketed more towards a younger audience. And that's kind of interesting. Also this week, Palm released the latest operating system update, the 1.2 operating system update for the Palm Pre or the Palm Web OS system. And I use the Palm Pre. I've been happy with it. It seems to be a little snappier. So I've been happy with that. And I encourage anybody who has the Palm Pre, make sure that they do that update. It's real easy. You just go into updates. I haven't noticed that it's hurt anything. I have a whole lot of homebrew apps. Most of the apps I have installed are, in fact, homebrew apps. And I haven't noticed that it's broken any of them. The phone does seem a little bit snappier, but you're still waiting 2 or 3 seconds for any app to open. I'm going to play a little bit more with it tomorrow. I'll do the GPS thing, and I'll play around more with some of the apps and see whether it is, in fact, noticeably snappier, whether the battery life is any better, anything like that. So I will post those findings on Talking Digital as I come up with them, and I'll also probably let you know through the podcast a little bit as well. The iPhone, again, has some great apps coming out for it. I know that there's been a lot of things lately, barcode scanning programs, things like that, which have really been pretty amazing. Anyway, a lot of good stuff going on in all areas of the smartphone area. I'd encourage you, if you don't have a smartphone, look into them. You may not be a geek. You may not think that you need something like that. But when you see what some of these phones do, they will replace your laptop in many cases. They'll replace your notebook in many cases. Notebook meaning your paper and pen notebook, if you're using something like that. They provide so many handy tools. They'll replace calculators, or they'll just add tools that you never knew that you needed. Finding the nearest Starbucks or taking a picture of a building or pointing it at a building and having it tell you what that building is with some apps. So there's just a lot of things you can do with it. Thinking about the Palm Pre, and I did a short review on my website about the Palm Pre that got a few people upset. Because unlike most reviews, you know, if you go and if you like a certain phone, whether it's the iPhone, whether it's Android, whatever, in fact, you can take it into digital cameras, you can even go into cars, you can go into just about anything. And if you try reading reviews, you usually find the reviews come from one of two things. You find the reviews are done either by companies who spent a week with the vehicle or a week with the phone, or maybe a month at the most with the phone, and they spent time with it, but not a lot of time, and they didn't necessarily put it through real-world situations. They may take the car out on a track and run it through real fast and test the brakes, and they may test the handling and how it feels to sit in the car and all of those things. They may take a smartphone out or a cell phone out, test the reception and the battery life for a week and see how well things hold up under the best circumstances that they possibly can. Well, I noticed this week that it had been 112 days since I'd first bought my Palm Pre. And so I sat down and I really tried to look at it, and I thought, you know, all the positives, you know, the other side of reviews, in addition to the people who write the reviews based on a short time with the product, the other side is you get a lot of fanboy reviews. These are reviews where people may live every day with the phone, but they decided before they even bought it that they loved it. And either they really do love it and they can't see anything bad in it, or they may see a lot of things that are bad in it, but they feel guilty because they bragged about it so much. So I decided what I was going to do is write a totally different kind of review. And I was just going to focus on the negatives. And that doesn't mean it was going to be. I didn't do it with a bad attitude. There's plenty of positives to talk about with the Palm Pre. But I just wanted to write a review where somebody looking at it could say, well, what is wrong with this? What are the weaknesses of this phone? It's very easy to see its strengths. It runs multiple applications. It has a wonderful digital camera. It has, you know, a lot of GPS abilities to it. It has an excellent, excellent email system. There's a lot of stuff going for the Palm Pre, and everywhere you go and read about the Palm Pre, you find all of those things mentioned. However, you don't find a lot written about the battery life. You don't find a lot written about the sluggishness of it, where people are really open and honest about what the drawbacks to this phone are. So while I have no regrets or very few regrets about using the Palm Pre, I do realize it's a first generation device. I didn't want to focus on all of those positive things that you can read about everywhere else. And I just wrote a fairly negative review on this Palm Pre and the things that really irritate me about it. Well, I went over to Pre Central, and which is a website dedicated to the Palm Pre, and I posted a link and I said, you know, I wrote this review. I'd love to hear what everybody thinks about this review. And I expected most of them to not like it, because you do get a lot of people who love the Pre over at Pre Central, which you'd expect. Well, I ended up getting a lot of very upset people about it, who called me, you know, told me I just hated it and that I was an Android fanboy and all of these things. And which, you know, this is the sort of thing that happens in forums. But as I posted this stuff and as I was reading these reviews, that was one thing. And I was, you know, I responded back to everybody who posted a reply. I said, thank you for your input. And I explained my situation, that I wasn't out to tear apart the Pre as much as I was just to give people a good quick glance of what the negatives were to the phone. Next thing I knew, my post had been completely pulled from the forums, which goes to show you that, that sort of thing happens as well, that the forums are run by people. I also noticed one thing that was funny, and that is that Pre Central was censoring the word fanboy. They were putting little asterisks in. And it just made me think of another, you know, other experiences I've had over the years with moderators who get kind of heavy-handed and start to, it doesn't matter. There's no standards of weights and measures on how to moderate a forum. But I just thought it was interesting at how little it takes to get something taken down simply because you wrote a negative review on a product. And I think that, you know, the more correspondence you have, the more interaction you have, the better, whether it's positive or negative. I would understand if I'd posted a review full of expletives and information like that, but to where it was just a straightforward commentary on the phone and the negative aspects of the phone. I thought it was interesting that they took it down, even though it really had nothing, you know, it was just a straightforward review. It wasn't intended to hurt anybody's feelings, and I didn't attack anybody who responded. I was grateful for the input that each person had. Let's see, moving on. Away from that topic, let's go into Picasa. This week, Picasa came out with its latest update. And if you're not familiar with Picasa, you certainly should be. It's one of the very few apps that was originally designed for the PC that had Mac users begging for a Mac version to come out. And I know there's a lot of programs that may kind of fit in that area. But, as nice as iMovie is, there's almost nothing like it for the PC that's as easy to use and as smooth with that's as versatile. GarageBand, there's very few music editors, especially the free or inexpensive ones, music editors that are as versatile as GarageBand. But then there's iPhoto, and iPhoto was a great program, and it still is a great program. It does catalog all your pictures and allows you to tag them fairly easily, allows you to do bulk processes to them, but nothing comes close. And I'll debate this with anybody. Nothing comes close to being as versatile of a tool with digital photos, especially cataloging, organizing, tagging, and all of those things, as Picasa. And Picasa is a free program. It's owned by Google, and it's PICASA.com, Picasa.com. Picasa scans your whole computer. It does a lot of the same thing as iPhoto does. It scans your whole computer, shows you all the photos in one place so you can sort through them. They don't have to be in any particular place on your computer. It will find them and it'll show them to you where they are. You can go through and you can do the tags. You can rename the photos. You can move them around into different folders and different albums. Very similar to the way you can with iPhoto, but right off the bat, you'll start to notice some of the differences. Picasa does have an excellent backup feature that allows you to back up all your pictures, and it doesn't compress them. It doesn't change your pictures. It just backs them up in the folders that they're in. And if you ever want to restore them, it just puts them back in the same folders they came from. Picasa also doesn't move your photos. It keeps them in whatever folders that they're in. It just helps you catalog them. This latest feature, this latest edition of Picasa, version 3.5, has a couple features that really, again, take it to the next level above iPhoto or anything else that's out there. One of the tools that Picasa has on it, starting with the easy stuff, is it now recognizes geotagging a little better and works better with the geotagged photos from the iPhone and from a lot of your new cell phones with GPS systems. And I guess there's a few standard digital cameras out there now that have GPS built in as well. But, the geotagging on photos is really the next big thing in digital photography. We've gotten to the point where resolution doesn't matter that much. And now it's all about the added little bonuses, video, like HD video, and again, like GPS, things like that, that are really going to be the big sellers for digital cameras and also for cell phones. So it's nice that Picasa recognizes that. The other very cool thing with the newest version of Picasa is it has face recognition that, again, blows the iPhoto face recognition out of the water, and it also automates the whole process. So you pick a picture and you label who that, or you tag who that person is in the photo, and you can do that with several photos or every person in your family, and then it goes through, sorts all the photos, and finds that face or those faces in all the photos, and it does so well at it that you hear stories where it recognizes the difference between two twins, or it's finding people who are very similar in appearance, even if this, whether it's racial or whether it's, just similar appearances, otherwise, and it's taking, same hair color and same, basic facial structure. Oh, sorry, bumped the mic there. Same basic, facial structure. All of these different things, and it still is capable of recognizing the difference. There are people, their big complaint about the Picasa 3.5 face recognition is that it's not perfect. So note that it's not perfect. It will still recognize faces. It will still recognize, mix up the faces and get some of them wrong. So still, even if it can run at 80 to 90% and they're saying it's doing even better than 90% face recognition, that's good enough for me, especially when you're somebody like me who has over 80 gigs of pictures, 120 gigs of pictures, something like that on your computer. Well, that about does it for this week's or this episode. I'm not sure whether we're doing this weekly, daily, bi-weekly, monthly. Well, I'm not sure what we're doing with this yet, but that does it for this week's That does it for this episode. Let's just say that. That does it for this episode of Talking Digital. You can read the show notes at talkingdigital.org and make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever possible. We will be listing this podcast on iTunes and as many other places as possible as the time goes on. Right now, we just still want to thank all of our early adopters who are out there listening. Please feel free to post your comments, your suggestions for future podcasts, any questions that you might have. Post those into the comments at talkingdigital.org or fill out any of the suggestion boxes you might find there as well. Send that information to us and keep track of me at talkingdigital at Facebook. And also you'll find me most of the other places too as Talking Digital or Adam Cochran. This is Adam Cochran with talkingdigital.org saying so long. Thanks for joining us.